Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I am your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and the third Sunday of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. So you just need to make your conversions across the United States and across the world, frankly. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain-injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And I promise you it does. Unfortunately, it does. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But most folks do not even know about brain injury, and I know I never did, not until it came to land on my doorstep. Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks understand what survivors and caregivers experience. Excuse me, I know you did not want to hear that cough that just came out of me, so I muted myself really quickly. So I apologize for that, but it would have been worse the other way. So on the third Sunday of every month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neurofatigue, anger, or various symptoms of brain injury. So actually, if you want to suggest a topic that I haven't touched on yet, you could always email me at donnaodonnellfugerski@gmail.com. For those of you who are new to my show, here's a little snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005 when my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. You can also learn a whole lot more on DonnaFugerski.com, and that will tell you a whole lot more about the book that is out. And I'll give you a little bit more information on that in a minute. But I share David's and my story in 4 episodes on this show starting in August of 2014, the last of which ended in November 2014, and that one featured a discussion with David himself. So we got the perspective of David's brain injury from my side, the caregiver insight, and from the survivor insight, right, from David. I also interviewed David on my April 19, 2020 show for his perspective on brain injury after 15 years, and because he is a retired professor of microbiology, I wanted to him to talk about COVID-19 pandemic. If you all remember, I'm sure you all remember exactly where you were when you heard about it, that we were going into lockdown, but in March, the pandemic started. And so because of David's interest in science and his microbiology background, I wanted him to impart some of his knowledge to the world, and he did for me, so I thank him. But you can find all my archived shows on my blog at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just click the On the Air Show menu. It's a tab under the category section on the right sidebar, and it's really easy. But look for the show menu. There are two On the Airs there. Or if you want to know more about David, just type in his last name, Figursky, in the search box. Again, it's on the right side, and you can find out lots and lots and lots. You can also read our complete story in my book called Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Life Publishing and released in 2018, November. You can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as an ebook and as a print book, and most recently as an audio book. So, and you can locate them at your local book clubs or your online bookstores, your brick and mortar bookstores, or even your libraries. And if they don't have any of those items that you want, ask them to order it. They will. They will order it for you. So go to my website, DonnaFigursky.com. It's DonnaFigursky.com to learn more about me. I hope that you're going to find my show tonight fun and informative, and I hope that you'll visit the shows of other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. Pacific Time. And then on the weekends, you can tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time and run all the way through to 10. So that's Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays to listen to your favorite shows. So Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States in all 50 states and in 36 countries. So with all that information spinning around in your heads right now, I want to get started on what we're really here to talk about tonight. And that is, what good has come from your brain injury? Think about it. You know, it's kind of weird. What good has come? Most people are probably shaking their heads and saying, what? What are you talking about? So you've had a brain injury, and you may have extreme physical limitations or devastating emotional or behavioral differences. You may not even feel like the same person anymore. Chances are your life has changed. It's probably drastically changed, actually. There's nothing good about brain injury. Or is there? Good may not be realized at the start of your brain injury journey, but many along the way do see the light or the good that has manifested itself from the injury. Now, a lot of people are going to sit back and say, nope, that's not me. And it may not be. It very well may not be. A lot of people don't buy into this idea. But I was shocked. Actually, I was surprised when I asked survivors if their life is better or worse after their brain injury. I never expect them to say that it's better. That doesn't even come across my radar in the beginning, you know, but yet so often they do. A lot of them say that their life is better than it was before their brain injury. And that's hard to understand for me, but we're going to talk about that tonight. One woman who's actually a friend of mine is dependent on a wheelchair. And she told me that she feels that she's a nicer person and that she likes herself so much better after her injury. Another friend told me that she is more fearless and confident since her brain injury. And yet another survivor said in his life that his life is actually better. He said before his injury, he never knew how short, valuable, and fragile life is. And that's a quote. I gave several quotes here, more fearless and confident. And this quote, how short, valuable, and fragile life is. Those are actual quotes from people that have said that their life is better after their brain injury. And this last person said he appreciates his life more now. So my panel this evening will be discussing how their brain injuries have impacted their lives. And so we're going to find out if their lives are better after their brain injury, kind of the same on an even keel, or are they worse? you know, which is what I would have expected, but we're going to talk to them about that. But first, let me tell you a little bit about each of my panelists. Barbara Wilson has been a friend on social media for many years, and recently Barbara has joined several panel discussions. So I want to thank Barbara for stepping up. Welcome, Barbara, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her before we actually hear from her. But while working as an agent for the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, I never met anybody that worked in the Internal Revenue Service. That's scary. In the BSA division, the Banking Secrecy Act, Barbara dealt with money laundering, terrorist activity, and human trafficking. But sadly, Barbara Wilson was also exposed to poisonous chemicals in the form of pesticides while at her job site. It took several days of exposure before Barbara realized the gravity of her problem. Over a two-week span, Barbara's symptoms intensified. Shortness of breath and cognitive issues sent her to the emergency room. Since her injury, Barbara has been trying to overcome the difficulties that her brain injury presents to her. As co-founder of Helping Hands Club, Barbara helps families have Thanksgiving meals. The Helping Hands Club, which is a nonprofit, and it just recently became a nonprofit, and Barbara's all excited about that, has partnered up with a shelter that deals with domestic violence. You can learn more about Barbara Wilson on my blog, and this is, I always remember too late to tell people, have a pencil and paper next to you in case you want to jot down URLs that I will pop out occasionally for you to look at after the show. But on my, you can go onto my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Traumatic, not dramatic, although it is dramatic too. Find the search button in the right sidebar and type her name to read her interview on Survivors Speak Out. You can also listen to Barbara on my show about anoxic brain injury. It's under the category, and I've mentioned this before, on the air show menu. Scroll to May 7, 2017. Barbara has a fascinating story, and I'm pleased to have her join my panel this evening. Also, if you don't remember all these dates and things, just put in Wilson, Barbara Wilson, into the search box, and everything that is on that Barbara has on the web will be found on my site. Excuse me. I also want to introduce Jamie Crane Mosey, also known as Jamie Mo Crazy, and she grew up on the ski slopes. By 18 years old, Jamie had won junior world championships and moved to Utah to continue training as a professional slopestyle and half-pipe skier. However, in 2015, Jamie crashed on the slopes at the World Tour Finals, went into a coma, and became paralyzed. In an instant, Jamie went from being one of the world's best slopestyle skiers to relearning basic gross motor skills, like walking upstairs and riding a bike. Jamie didn't let this horrific accident keep her down. Instead, she worked to recover. Leaning on her friends and family for support, she charged forward with optimism. Jamie is currently studying neuroscience at Harvard and works as a celebrity ski guide, competition coach, and ski coach. Jamie enjoys skiing, doing yoga or Pilates, or maybe both, rock climbing and mountain biking. So welcome to both you, Jamie, and to Barbara. I'm so happy to have you both on my show tonight. Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. I'm excited to be here.
Okay. Before we get down to the nitty-gritty, I want to ask each of you to tell the audience a little bit about you. And I gave them kind of a little nutshell, but maybe you want to just tell a little bit more about your story and how you ended up having a brain injury. So, Jamie, why don't we start with you tonight?
All right. So a little bit more about my story. Basically, on April 11, 2015, I was competing at World Tour Finals in slopestyle skiing. Slopestyle skiing is multiple jumps and rails, like a terrain park. You might have seen it at X Games. But so I was competing. And my first run, I ended up in fourth place. And people who compete know that fourth place never gets remembered. You're not on the podium. And I was ambitious, so I didn't want to stay in fourth place. So I upgraded my off-axis backflip to an off-axis double backflip because I had become the first woman in the world to compete any sort of double in any run, which happened to be the 2013 X Games. And it's pretty remarkable now because it was such a big step for women to do a double flip. Then now everybody on the pro circuit, they just are holding the Olympic qualifiers. Yesterday they had Big Air qualifier, the first Big Air Olympic qualifier. And all of the girls who podiumed were doing much harder double flips than I had ever done. However, back in 2015, I was the only woman doing a double flip. So I had a pretty good chance of getting on the podium and higher up on the podium. So on that run, I actually landed on my feet, and I caught an edge, and I whiplashed my head into the snow in such a way my brain started bleeding in 8 spots, and I hurt my right brainstem, which paralyzed my right side, and I instantly went into a coma, a natural coma. And when I was actually airlifted to Vancouver General Hospital, they wrote my fatality report because the statistics of my recovery were so low. I was a 3 on the Glasgow Coma Scale, which is lower than 3 is brain dead.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
My accident I had a lot that played into my recovery, but my accident was much more severe than most everybody who meets me would think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was remarkable because I know when you were in the helicopter being flighted over to the hospital, they had the papers ready for you to indicate that you had already died. It wasn't signed off yet, but that's how bad everyone thought you were. And yet you have made, a remarkable recovery because of your determination, because of your patience, because of your what you said before about being on the podium. You didn't want to be fourth. You want to be third or second or even first, probably, knowing you. So I think that probably was your best way to get out of your very bad situation. And you're still
Thank
working
you.
On it, I know.
And I did have a lot of support. My mom, who everyone calls us Fruit, what she did was remarkable, and the amount of all the different levels of support I had, then the doctors taking care of me and becoming the first patient in North America to receive an oxygen and pressure analyzing brain bolt that they had learned about in Cambridge, England, 1 month prior to when I arrived at the hospital, and I was the first person they used it on in North America. And now the rate in critical coma cases at Vancouver General Hospital has increased by 33%. And the lived experience and the fact that I had an older sister who is a doctor who was assigned to be my primary care physician, so making the rounds with the doctors, and my family involvement was incredible. And then my support expanded to relearning how to ski with the National Ability Center, which is a center in Park City, Utah, that deals with cognitive and physical disabilities, or changes in ability. So just the fact of how much support I have, I will always be grateful because it brought beyond what I could. And speaking of support, I'm on the Utah Brain Injury Council. I'm a board member, and I actually just found this out last month when we were actually doing a full day analysis of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats that the brain injury in Utah is facing. And my mom was talking about, I went to outpatient therapy 5 days a week for 3 hours, and how they wanted me to go originally one day a week, and how all she had to do was sign it. And she wasn't sure what it was that she signed because it was in the middle of that crisis and family trauma. You're not really paying attention. If someone says, if you sign this piece of paper, your daughter can do 5 days of therapy instead of 1 day of therapy, you're going to sign the piece of paper. And I found out that that actually is one of the funds that the Utah Brain Injury Council manages, and it's a tax that's made from everyone who registers their car in the state of Utah. $1 of the registration fees goes into this TBI fund, and it makes it so that they can offer more immediate care than the insurance would cover. So I was like, that is so cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah. That is cool. You know, and the thing is, Jamie, you know, you mentioned support. You had phenomenal support from your family and from your doctors. And I think that is so key. For folks who have better support, I think they do better in with a brain injury. They heal and recover much better than people that don't have support. And so what I want people to do here now, too, is to hear, because Jamie's story is really remarkable. So I really want you to go to my blog, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, and just type in Jamie's name, just the J-A-M-I-E. You're going to get Jamie Fairless, and you're going to get Jamie Crane Mosey. So but look up Jamie Crane Mosey and see everything that she has to do. Listen to the shows that she's been on. She offers so much good advice. And so thanks for doing that, Jamie. And I want to go into with Barbara right now, too. And Barbara, say, can you just give us a little rundown of how you became into this position of a brain injury survivor?
Sure. Of course, I was with the Internal Revenue Service working in the Bank Secrecy Act. We did a lot of your money laundering, terrorist activity type of work. We went out and trained different type of businesses, individuals, about how to detect this type of activity and how to report this such activity to the Internal Revenue Service. And I was doing an audit, and all of a sudden my eyes started burning really bad. My throat was really itchy. I started coughing really bad. And I just started feeling like all of a sudden I was coming down with the flu, and it just got worse during the day. I left for lunch, and all the symptoms kind of cleared up. I went back to work, back on the job site, and it started all over again. Well, by the time I got home that night, I just felt awful. And this was September 1st, 2009, and then I had to go back out on the job site the second day for a half a day. And it all started all over again. I noticed on the second day that the books and records looked like it had been sprayed with something. I don't know what. But the day I also smelled pesticides. I didn't smell it the first day, but I smelled it the second day. And it was really strong. And I said, okay, I emailed my coworker and said, okay, it must be pesticides that are making me sick. So I called my manager and said, I need to call out the rest of the day. I'm not feeling well, blah, blah, blah. I'll be back in tomorrow. And, so the following week was Labor Day week. So, and I was also in the middle of my master's program, and we were in the middle of finals, and I had all A's. And by the time I had opened up my finals, which was about a week later, everything looked Chinese. Nothing looked normal to me. Every day I went downhill. I got to the point where I couldn't walk. I was having very hard chest pains. My girlfriend and I had like a yard sale. I could barely walk. I could barely grip the things. It really hit me neurologically. All my strength was gone. So it was a week later until I went to the hospital. I had lymph nodes swollen in my lungs. Then they put me on oxygen. They kept me for one night, and they wanted to call poison control. It just really got ugly because, you know, when you're with the IRS, you have to protect the client. So I couldn't tell them where I was at. So it created a jumble mess. Because it got to the point where the hospitals didn't want to work with me because I couldn't really work with them.
Yeah.
You know,
wow.
We could not get OSHA involved because we couldn't let them know where I was at.
Yeah.
And
so you're between a rock and a hard place.
I was very much so in it between a rock and a hard spot. I ended up cutting off my hair, most of my hair, because I couldn't handle a blow dryer. And I had longer red hair, and I had to cut it up to my chin. So it took them about a year to discover I had a brain injury. It was about 11 months into it, I decided to cut my hair again and send a sample off to a police lab. And I believe it was in Utah to find out what I had been exposed to. And the guy had told me that pesticides only stay in your system for 24 hours. It would not show up in the hair strand. And Lord and behold, they were there. It was Perinthian and DEET. And when you put these two together, it creates a synergy. Like if you were to put bleach and ammonia together, it creates like a bomb.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, my God.
So,
I never heard this part of your story.
Really, really like a time bomb that went off. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. These books and records were stored in a Tonics box in a rural area where there used to be a chemical plant near it. So we don't know if there was a drip from the chemical plant to where the chemicals got into that Conex box, if it was from farming. It wasn't your typical rate out of a can because these were more stronger because this did show up in my hair.
After so much time.
So I finally found a doctor in Richmond about an hour and a half away who took me through all this testing, and he found out that I had four parts of the area of the brain that were damaged. My two frontal and both lobes were damaged. So I had a lot of issues going on, cognitive, memory. I still have memory issues of today. I only have 29% short term. He just tested me about 3 months ago. I'm only at 29%,
wow.
So which is heartbreaking.
Wow.
Because I'm soon ready to go back to work. So
I'm gonna
refer something that a lot of people know of. I have a syndrome similar to the Persian Gulf War syndrome. That's what my syndrome is like. It's also now gone into MS. I now deal with MS.
So it's not over yet, Tom.
It's not over yet. And when the DEET can says do not spray it on your skin, please don't. It can and will cause seizures because I now deal with seizures. Seizures are also I take three seizure medications to push away the seizures. So, people, please don't put DEET on your skin. It really is a horrible thing. It really
take
is.
Take it from one who knows there, So, I'm going to just bend us over a little bit here on this so we can get into some of what good has come after. Because you haven't told me anything good at all right there. It's all been pretty bad, but I know that you have recovered in your life a lot of good that's happened to you, too.
Absolutely.
People... check out my blog, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, .com, to hear more about Barbara's story. Although I will tell you, I heard more tonight than I knew from the last time when I interviewed her. So, there's always more to learn. That's what I always find out. So our topic tonight is what good has come from your brain injury. So I went right to my husband and asked him what good has come from his brain injury. But first, a little background on David. I think you need to have this before you can understand what the good is that has come. And then I'll tell you what he's told me. But David had three brain surgeries in January of 2005, and which completely upended his life. He was a professor of microbiology at Columbia University in New York City, a career that would have likely lasted well into his eighth decade if he followed the pattern of his many scientist friends. You can check it out yourself. Scientists don't seem to want to ever retire. They just work on and on and on. And because they've got this inquiring mind and they can't give it up. So, but David's career was cut short by that extra chin-up, which resulted in a subarachnoid hemorrhage, an aneurysm, and an AVM, which is an arterial venous malformation, which is a tangle of blood vessels that acts as a time bomb in your brain if you end up having one. But that's the reason that he had the three brain surgeries, because of each of those, the subarachnoid hemorrhage, the aneurysm, and the AVM. And although David was able to return to his laboratory and guide the research of his graduate students and his postdoctoral fellows for an additional 7 years after his injury, he ended his career shy of his seventh decade. So he isn't going to make that eighth decade thing. And you know what? I'm glad because I'd still be in New York City area. And I'm out in the desert where it's, 80 degrees today in Arizona? Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm really, really okay with that. So, but I was really concerned that not being able to work, having to quit. David always said he would never retire, you know. I just knew that. And I was afraid that his having to retire, or his choice, it wasn't he had to, he made a choice, would affect him adversely. But I was surprised when he decided that he had written his last grant, probably because I had also said, David, if you write another grant, I'm going to California and leaving you. You can meet me there when you're done. But, I mean, that was just a joke, folks. I wouldn't have done it. But I was like, okay, enough's enough already. But anyhow, we decided, I was surprised when he decided not to write any more grants. And I was equally surprised when he said, let's move to the desert. You know, and I was like, oh, God. But then I became worried that he'd be bored for not having his science occupying his every moment. But I was wrong. And I'm so glad that I was wrong. But when I asked David what good had come from his brain injury, he told me that he never would have retired and he would have missed out on the many years we are spending living in our beautiful desert. David absolutely loves it here. He does not miss the snow and the ice of our New Jersey winters. He doesn't miss his commute into New York City, which after 9/11 became, instead of 30 minutes, an hour or more. He doesn't miss the ice and the snow, which caused him horrendous difficulty because of his balance challenge. And walking on plain ground, just on plain flat ground, is challenging enough for him. That the ice and the snow was really a problem. So he doesn't miss any of that. Now, David also has found so many other directions to focus on since he retired, since we moved to the desert. And I have benefited from it greatly. David is my first editor for all my writing endeavors, including my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. He was definitely the first editor. I can tell you he's read that book upwards of 13 times. I don't know how many more other than that, but he has. Even after it's been published, he's read it the full book many times. I can't even look at it anymore after writing it so long, so much, but it's he still does. And he's also my editor for the other books that I'm currently working on and my picture book manuscripts. So let me just plug those because I'm working on a teacher memoir now. It's kind of a guide to teaching, but it's also be a fly on a first grade and third grade classroom wall Wouldn't you love to do that? Wouldn't you love to be able to, if you're a parent, wouldn't you love to be able to sit as a fly on the wall and watch your child interacting in school and see what they do? School is not like it used to be. It's not like when I grew up, which is a lot of years ago. But so that's what this new book is, and it's ready to be submitted come January. I'm waiting till the new year to submit it, and then hope, crossing my fingers. And of course, I'm working on a book about brain injury called Conversations that I'm working on with Deb Brandon, who was also supposed to be here tonight, but is having a brain injury event tonight. She has a very, very bad headache after traveling. So she's not able to be here, but she's here very often. And Deb is my co-author with me on this book that we are calling Conversations. And it's a book about discussing topics of survivor and caregiver through those lenses. So that's really fun. David is also very involved in learning as much as he can about COVID-19, and he writes articles about it, which I publish on my blog. Again, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, and are subsequently sent to a large number of his email followers. So David has found his fork in the road after his brain injury. Jamie, let's ask you, what good, can you tell us what good you found in your life after your brain injury? And then Barbara, I want to hear yours too.
Yes. Well, I was very intrigued by this topic, what good came from your brain injury, because for me, an incredible amount of good came from my brain injury. And it's interesting. I was a professional skier. I was on the U.S. ski team, and I was competing at X Games prior to my brain injury. And I would say that my life is better now, which is the truth. There was definitely ups and downs. There was a lot of turmoil, and there was stress and anxiety for a lot longer. So for me, my accident was very visible. And by that, I was competing at a competition, which was actually being filmed on television. It was not a live show, though, so they didn't actually air my fall. It was my first run, but not my fall, because they weren't sure if I was going to live at the time that they were airing the show.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't air my show, which I think is a great thing that they did. But I was, in the little world of skiing, I was a well-known figure. So I had international supporters. I had people involved. There was all these different news sources. I was on national television in the U.S. and Canada. And everyone heard about the beginning of my recovery process and the part when I relearned how to walk and when I relearned how to swallow water and I relearned how to do those visible things. There was a lot of response for that. And then there was a couple of years when I was going through the invisible deficits of a brain injury, which everyone who's had a brain injury has had invisible deficits. And there are so many, and they are so much harder, in my opinion. It takes so much longer. Like, for me, that's what happened. Back to college. And so, for me, I had no difficulty getting graded. And
Jamie, you're cutting
out on
us. Not
Jamie, the brain injury survivor.
I am?
You're cutting out on us. Yeah, you were. I didn't hear much of that. I heard college, and then that was about it.
Oh, that's strange. I'm at my house, and I have really good service here.
Okay, well, it's good now. Okay, continue on with that.
So I went back to college, and I didn't have any disability help. And one of the amazing things for me in my recovery was I was having to perform as Jamie, and rebuild my life as Jamie 2.0 is what I always say, Jamie 2.0.
Yeah.
And now the life I've rebuilt is incredible. I am a public speaker. I travel. I'm actually going to Savannah, Georgia next week. I'm going to be the closing keynote for the Society of Influential Travel Excellence, their annual conference. So I travel around and I give keynotes, and I have built Mo Crazy Strong, which I'm one of the founders with my mom and my sister. And so it's a nonprofit, which we do a lot of education and outreach opportunities for TBI, because with an understanding of neuroplasticity, TBI has changed so dramatically in the past decade, and it's continuing to change. And many of the doctors and therapists who went through training, it's a completely different brain injury that people are understanding. Like, the outcome is not definite. This is a specifically traumatic brain injury, but the outcomes that you'll have when you look at statistics are completely different than what they thought was the possibilities. So it's changed so dramatically, and there's so many more opportunities for people to recreate synaptic connections in their brain and rebuild their brain pathways than they ever thought was possible to do. And there's steps, like the habits that you build. And it's like with a brain injury, the deficits that you have and you have to rebuild, it's like a giant snowstorm. With a traumatic brain injury, a giant snowstorm is all over your brain, and it dumped and all over your brain pathways. So when it's snowing, you can't drive because it gets all, the roads get covered. Your brain pathways get covered with snow, and you have to rebuild them or build new ones. And it's as hard as walking through snow up to your neck. However, it is possible. And so that's one of the huge things, is that it's possible to rebuild these pathways and find ways to reach the outcome you want without taking the same path to get there that you had imagined you would take. And so there are permanent changes in your ability level that can result from a brain injury, or any sort of brain injury, an acquired or traumatic brain injury. However, with those changes in ability, you can still create a life that you love by figuring out how to accomplish what you want to do by taking a different path. So the example I always share with that is when I was leaving the hospital and doing outpatient therapy, I wanted to be a little bit more crazy again and do something fun for me. And so extreme. Mm-hmm. So it was summertime, so I wanted to go skateboarding. And at that time, even with a helmet on, it would have been really detrimental if I had hit my head again. And my balance was all off because I was recovering. So I couldn't go skateboarding. However, I wanted to have that portion of Jamie. And so they came up with the idea. My mom and my physical therapist were talking together and came up with the idea of having me bring my skateboard into therapy, and for the apparatus that you usually relearn how to walk on, they would harness me in. Mm-hmm. So I was in a harness, and then I could go skateboarding. So if I fell, I could be in a harness and not hit the ground. And so it was finding a way to give what I wanted, the outcome I wanted, by taking a different path to get there. And a lot of people beyond people who are in traumatic, associated to any brain injury now, have really felt that with COVID, because with COVID, our lives changed. And for many people, it changed as quickly as a brain injury changes. One day, you didn't really think much of it, and the next day, you couldn't go to the grocery store. Like, what? You know, so with that changes, and work changes, and people had to, there was people who were working from home and taking care of their kids at home who were not going to school and trying to homeschool them while they were running full-time career jobs. It was crazy. And now as we're beginning to recover and stuff, there's so much that has changed. And everyone says, let me get back to normal. Well, those of us who have had a brain injury know that we're never getting back to normal after COVID. We're going to get back to an amazing opportunity, and we're going to build life again and have opportunities. But it's not going to be the same as it was before. And sometimes I even wonder if we really want it to be exactly the same as it was before. So maybe we can take the changes, and with the things we're struggling with as a society before COVID, we can strengthen it and make better choices as we're rebuilding. Mm-hmm. But the challenge is figuring out how to get to the outcomes that we want after COVID while taking alternative paths to get there. And that's something that all of corporate America is struggling with right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's interesting, because I just wanted to say,
my book titled Prisoners Without Bars, which was obviously referring to David and myself, because of, you know, the situation that we're in, that he's a prisoner of his body. He can't just leave the house. And we both were prisoners at one point where we were not being able to do. Well, that title now encompasses everybody in the world, because we've all become prisoners without bars with the COVID virus that was going on. And so I think it gives, like what you were saying, it gives people a better perspective of what people who have a brain injury or have a serious injury of some sort that limits them, what they are going through, you know. So because people, like you said, it happened in an instant where one day, I can remember March 13th, I was at rehearsal for a play, and the theater club president came in and said, go home, everybody, and stay home. It's all over. We don't know when we're coming back. And I think at that time we weren't sure that it wasn't, you know, going to be just 2 weeks, which I thought was a horrendous amount of time. But, you know, we all went through this. We all went through the isolation that many brain injury survivors live through all the time. So, yeah, it's. I think it's a very interesting new way that we're going to go. It's kind of like another fork in the road that we're all taking. And I think people, at least I know, I realized that when this happened, the COVID thing, when they told me that I had to stay in the house and I couldn't go to the grocery store to do my errands or do whatever, I was like, I can't do this. This is not going to work for me. I need to get that freedom. And then after about a month or two, it was like, okay, I'm all right with this. I'm good with it. And by the time they were ready to release us again, when they started to say, well, okay, you probably can go out if you've had your two shots, which was early this year, I was like, I don't really need to go out anymore. So you make that transition, and you do make the best of it, and take another path and make it work for you, you know. So I think that's the good that's come out of it for me, is that I don't have to be running around constantly. I can busy myself plenty without having to do that. So Barbara, I want to tap into you too and find out what have you found in your life after your brain injury that is good.
Well, with me, I had started a career. I was 5 years into it, and I was retired at the age of 40 because of the brain injury. So my whole world changed at the age of 40. I had gone to school to become an accountant, to become an auditor, and it just completely stopped. And, of course, all these things that had to do with an acquired brain injury had started. And I think the one thing that you learn as a brain injury person is determination. Realize that you have to have that determination to, first of all, just get out of bed every day, to work yourself to do those little goals. And, you know, every day it was like, you're going to walk to the end of the block. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. As the years went by, I took a cake decorating class, which was really hard. She talked really fast, so the processing speed with me was a lot slower. So I did get through the class and had some really cute cakes. But that was a very huge, monumental achievement for me, to actually get back into a classroom environment, even though it was cake decorating. I thought it was wonderful. It was something that I had always wanted to do but never had the time, because I was always in some type of career. I was either doing hair, or I was an apprentice at the shipyard and always taking classes at night, or I was going to school and then started with the IRS and was taking my master's program as well. So I had always wanted to play around with cake decorating, so then now I had the ability to do that. I started hobbies in my yard. I redid the landscaping, which is something that I had always wanted to do. Of course, never had the time to do. And then, of course, now, present, my girlfriend and I started the nonprofit organization for helping a shelter that deals with domestic violence. We've been in it now for 7 years, and each year it grows. And this year, like I said, we fed 71 families, and it's just a feeling of phenomenal. And the one thing I've learned over the years is, like Jamie was saying, is the support, tremendous support. The doctors, the family, the friends, that gives you the strength to keep on and keeping yourself determined and being strong. So there has been a lot of good that's come out of it. People wouldn't say that this was good, but I actually even got a divorce. But me being divorced has even given me more independence of being on my own. And I make more decisions now on my own, which I really didn't have before. So kind of having that acquired brain injury, it can even create some difficulties because you kind of go back and forth. Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Should I be doing this? Oh, my God. Like, I bought a puppy, and I'm like, am I allowed to do this? Because I was always used to being, I was with my husband for 30 years, and I'm like, can I do this? And I'm like, yes, I'm going to, from the dog store. And I brought him home, and I'm like, oh, my God, I actually did this. And I was so excited that I had bought a puppy home, and it was just such an incredible feeling, and it was just another phenomenal moment for me. But there's been a lot of good. I'm toying with the idea of a book. I've kind of started it, but just haven't gotten back to it. But there's just been... You know, I sleep better at night. I'm very proud of who I am. I'm very proud to say that I have an acquired brain injury. People are very interested in hearing about it. I'm very proud of the brain injury world. So I'm blessed that it actually happened to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's so hard to understand that. But, you know, when I... when I think about it, what you just brought this up to me, but to my mind is, I have met so many amazing people through the brain injury community that I would never have met before. I mean, Barbara and Jamie, I wouldn't have met you guys. I would not be friends with you. I mean, I consider us all to be friends at this point. We've known each other for years, although we've never met in person. But, you know, and that's happened for so many people, because I do the show since 2014, so that's a lot of years of getting to meet people and talk to them intimately about their brain injury. I do the blog, so I get to learn a lot more about a lot of other people that, you know, this would not have happened if David hadn't had a brain injury. Now, let me just go back and qualify this. Would I change it? Do I prefer if he didn't? Yeah, of course I do. I would prefer if he never had a brain injury. But we're going to look at the good part. We're going to look at the glass half full, or the lemonade instead of the whatever. Because it did happen, and I can't change it. So I am going to look at the good. I am going to try to find what's going to make us happier, you know, because of this. And this does. This makes both of us happier that we are doing something, because David is too. Like I said, he's my editor in the background. He's my whole encyclopedia of brain injury too, on top of that. So I'm going to turn the corner a little bit here again.
I'm blessed on happiness because my coworker had the case that I was supposed to audit, and she transferred it to me. Had she not transferred that, she would have gotten the brain injury.
Yeah.
That would have been awful because she was in her 60s and his asthma. I am blessed every day that it happened to me and not her. That's why I have the feelings of blessed, because I would have much rather it happen to me than to her.
Wow, that's pretty phenomenal to think that, Barbara. But
I wouldn't have wanted it to happen to her.
Yeah, it's just like who's in the wrong place at the wrong time, I guess, in that kind of a situation. But I want to go into this quote. It's from an unknown author, and I stumbled on it in my research of finding out what I wanted to cover on the show. And the quote resonated with me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. And this is the quote. When something bad happens, you have three choices. You can let it define you. You can let it defeat you. Or you can let it strengthen you. I'll say that one more time. You can let it define you, let it defeat you, or you can let it strengthen you. Those are your three choices when something bad happens. So which, if any of these three, can you best identify with? And Jamie, why don't we start with you this time?
So I would say for me, my injury did two. It strengthened me, and in a way it does define me, because that is how I get hired for my corporate motivational speaking. I've done a lot of work. It took years to be able to be this to present the way I do at speaking. Just sharing, there's a lot that goes behind being a professional speaker than just having things to say, which I had to learn.
Yeah.
A lot of marketing, sales, construction. Anyways, but so in a way, my brain injury strengthens me, and it does define me, because that's what my career is based off of, is my brain injury. And so Mo Crazy Strong, like, we're having a Namaste. It's a yoga mindset resilience luxury retreat at Park City this March 24th to 27th. And that whole event is defined as me, but I did that on purpose. I kind of strengthened the definition. Like, I work with a PR team. Like, that's part of what we do. I'm actually getting married this May on the top of Wilmington, which is the same mountain I had my injury on. And one of the things that we're doing is, it's a nice little happy story, and we're happy for the welcoming party. We're advertising it, and it's going to be in the local news source. Who all people said how they were affected anymore. She's in Canada. So she was telling me all about it. She then, like, remembered it. All those people can come to it. And the whole story was covered by the New York Times. And that made that, that media and publicity for brain injury. You can build the life that you want after a brain injury. And there's a lot that goes into it. But I firmly believe that I have built a life I love after my brain injury. And I think I'm really lucky to have had the brain injury.
Yeah. You're cutting out again, Jamie. I heard a little bit of that. I'm trying to piece it together. But the parts that I was able to hear, and I hope the audience is hearing it, it's just my earphones or headphones. But anyway, I totally agree with you on that, that you can be defined by it and you can be strengthened by it. And I think that some people, I think what this quote almost meant was you can be defined by it. You can let it define you, meaning in a bad way, meaning in an a non-positive way, in a negative way, like, oh, woe is me, I have a brain injury. But yet you're right. You twisted that around and said, yeah, it does define you. And I think, too, I think that it has also defined David and it's defined me as a caregiver because, again, we're kind of like on that same path as you are, a different path, but we're working to help others understand brain injury a whole lot more. So, again, we could be here sitting here and saying, oh, God, this is the most horrible thing in the world, you know, or we can try to make the best of it. And I think the way you're doing it is by reaching out to the public and letting them know, as we are here on Brain Injury Radio Network and Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury blog and my book and everything else that I do in the brain injury world, my whole world is encapsulated by brain injury, I think. You know, most of it, not all of it. There's a little portion of it that I'm not thinking about that. But most of the time, yeah. And I think it's not a bad thing if you can be defined by it, if you let yourself be defined by it in a positive manner, which is what you have done. And Barbara, what about you?
I think
you can let it define you, let it defeat you.
I think it has defined me some. I think it has definitely strengthened me. I used to volunteer at a Christian school, and I did a speech with them on brain injuries and tried to help teach the children how to, you know, definitely wear your helmets and riding bikes and stuff like that. I've done a lot of educating as far as with friends and family in the brain injury world. Things have kind of calmed down now where my focus is now on teaching people about domestic abuse. But strengthening, oh, absolutely. Yeah, you become stronger. You get that determination, that will to live, that will to want to survive and strive and have definition to your life, to try to find purpose. Because with me, I felt in the beginning when I retired that my purpose was gone because I lived for my job.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
so many
where
people
I
do.
Am now. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to fulfill another purpose now.
Yeah.
I want to go back to school. I want to finish up my master's program. So I just have goals now, and I think everyone needs to focus on goals. That's so much of a positive in your life, even if it's small ones. Just make goals. You have to have goals in your life. And focus on bright things, you know, be thankful that you woke up in the morning, that you've planted your feet on the ground. Yes, it's hard having a brain injury, but there's so many things to be thankful for. God has you here on earth for a reason and define that purpose and that reason. And just try to get yourself into something that's going to give you pleasure as a person.
Yeah.
If it is outreach to the brain injury world, do that.
Yeah. Your comment made me think of the famous actor, Christopher Reeve, who was most commonly known for his role in Superman. And he didn't have a brain injury, but he suffered a spinal cord injury in 1995 when he was thrown from a horse during an equestrian competition. So, Jamie, you might be able to relate to him in this way. But he was paralyzed from his neck down, and he required the use of a ventilator. And for all intents and purposes, he could have easily given up and turned inward, you know, just as brain injury survivors can too. But his injury didn't stop him. By 1997, Christopher Reeve was back on the set directing and involved in many other creative endeavors from his wheelchair, you know, and the ventilator. So I bring up this example because many brain injury survivors deal with extreme ramifications of their injuries, as did Reeve, And it's important to know that, and this is what we were just talking about, Barbara, you said it, determination, patience, and purpose, and a lot of hard work. It's not easy to get out of that situation when you are down to an infantile state, as David was, and not being able to walk or talk or eat food, or you couldn't do anything on your own. You know, it takes a lot of hard work, but it's important to know that life can go on, and it can produce valuable results. And I think that both of you have attested to that tonight, which is phenomenal. I mean, I think it's good for people to hear this, that brain injury does not have to, as we go up to that quote above, defeat you. It doesn't have to be a defeating effect in your life. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It's not. Nobody will say it's easy. But you can do it if you push for it and take a different path, move along a different route. So maybe you're not going to be working for the IRS anymore. And Jamie, you're not going to be a superstar skier in the X Games and everything anymore. But you've put your efforts into another facet of your life in helping brain injury. And probably you're going to be a whole lot more effective, you know? You're going to be doing something, you're going to be helping others. And there's nothing better, I think, than to do that. So I think if you look at that as your glass half full, then that works. And I think there's one more quote I want to get to if I can.
Okay,
go
really
ahead.
Quickly.
Maybe
I was just going to really quickly share that one of the powerful things is that a lot of people know how to succeed and be successful and push to get things through. But when you're climbing the mountain of life, if you get caught in a metaphorical avalanche, it's a whole different climb for you to climb an alternative peak. And so since we've all had brain injuries, different forms of brain injuries, we have the power now to understand how to climb an alternative peak. So that's really wonderful. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah. That's great. But, okay, so not to become preachy right now, but here's another quote that I think is worth examining. And we only have a few more minutes to do because our time is going away as usual so fast. But it's from another unknown quoter. And this is the quote. Your body can stand almost anything. It's your mind you have to convince. So believe me, I am not discounting the physical pain or the limitations either that result from a brain injury. But I am wondering how much a part of our brains play in the recovery process. I do know that in normal, everyday life, a good attitude is a positive thing and can be uplifting to a survivor, to a caregiver, to anybody. On the other hand, a bad attitude can bring a person down. So how do you promote a good attitude and push aside a bad attitude, especially if you're fighting multiple limitations and complications from a brain injury? We only have about 1.5 minutes each. So go ahead, Jan, Barbara, start that one.
Well, I think when you're quote-unquote in a survivor world and you're trying to survive, that determination kicks in. Later on in life, for me, depression did set in, but you're still having to fight every day to fight depression. I didn't want to be depressed. I wanted to keep fighting depression. The best thing for me is I went to the doctor and got medication for depression. I didn't want to be depressed. I wanted to stay on a happy note, to stay positive. Depression comes very easy for TBI patients.
Yes, absolutely.
So I wanted to fight to keep on top. So I got involved in things that would make me happy. I did hobbies. I did yard work. I swam in my pool. I joined a gym. I bought a dog.
So you took definite steps to a positive,
yes.
to a positive attitude, which is a very good
yes.
advice. Jamie, what
yes.
do you, what about you?
When you're feeling low, I did go through a stage when I was depressed, and I started going to see a psychotherapist, and I went
mm-hmm.
for 3 years, and I think that was incredibly helpful. And so finding ways to get help, get support, whether it's going to get like we both, when we were depressed, we took action not to stay depressed. So that's one of
yes.
the big things. When you're feeling upset, find ways to look at the view. So when
uh-huh.
I was leaving the hospital, I was really weak, and I was embarrassed and mortified, and it was depressing that I was so weak. And so whenever I had to go hiking, it kept me to take a break. So I changed the word choice. The word choice you're using is incredibly important. This is Mama Fruit's psychology idea. She said, instead of saying,
mm-hmm.
I need another break, say, look at the view. Because when we were hiking, there was always
ah.
a view looking at. Even if you're in the woods, there's
yeah.
a view. Every life, there's a view. So if you're feeling overwhelmed and stressed out, stop for a moment. Take some deep breaths and look at the view. Look at what you currently love in your life and go with that.
Mm-hmm.
And do things that genuinely make you happy. We do too much about trying to be what society thinks is successful and pushing things that we want to do aside by what we think we should
mm-hmm.
be doing. And sometimes you just need to do what you want to do. Maybe it's taking that bubble bath. Maybe it's listening to music. Just doing things that
yeah.
actually make you personally happy is very important.
And that brings me to, Jamie, you set me up perfectly for this. That brings me to me time stones, which I talk about a lot on the show. And they can be anything. I pass them out every time I give a talk to my audience. And it's just me time stones, and you can pick up anything. It can be a piece of gravel in your yard. It can be a little trinket that you just like and you keep in your pocket that reminds you to take care of yourself. Or, as Jamie put it, look at the view. Stop. Think about what's good in your life. You know, I mean, you can physically look at the view, too. But you can also metaphorically look at the view and just the fact that you're going to think about the good stuff. But take the time. You said a bubble bath. David laughed at that when I said that. I always use that analogy in my talks. And he goes, Donna, nobody takes bubble baths. I said, yes, they do, David. You know, I don't. But, I mean, they do. And people can relate to if you're taking a bubble bath, it's really pampering yourself. So I like that imagery of taking care of yourself. And that's what a me time stone is. So if you carry them around in your pocket, have them next to your computer, have them on your bathroom vanity or next to your bed, and every time you see one, you remember that you need to take a moment for you, the moment, take the view, look at the view thing, or read a chapter in a book, have a cup of tea or coffee, whatever it is, stop and take. And I tell this to caregivers all the time, but this is something that we all need. You all need to stop and you know, take a deep breath and look at the view and take a me time stone in the meantime. And I have a whole bunch of them sitting here. I'm just looking at them. Some are really big, like this one's 2.5 inches, and this one's only about a half an inch. Well, less than that. You know, but there are sizes for everybody. So and if you can pick up whatever you want that's going to be your reminder. So on that note, thanks, Jamie, for letting me lead into that, because I wasn't even going to talk about that tonight, but I think that's it was perfect. So I'm going to have to close down now because it's getting time for the next host to come on. So I want to say thank you so much to Jamie Crane Mosey and to Barbara Wilson for sharing so much of their stories, their brain injury stories with us and offering help to other survivors. And you can always learn more about Jamie Crane Mosey and Barbara Wilson on my blog, and you all should be able to say it by now because I've said it enough, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And go to the right-hand sidebar and click on the air show menu. You'll see, I don't know how many podcasts are there now. There are just tons of them. So look through them, see the titles. If there's something you want to listen to, just click. It'll take you right to it. So I want you to also please, I hope you'll read the interviews of not only Jamie's and Barbara's speak out interviews on my blog, but also the interviews of other TBI survivors and caregivers. And there's a place for brain injury resources. There's a place for COVID if you want to check poke into David's articles that he's written about COVID. He's right up to date on it every single day. He's been studying that since it began. So, yeah, check that out. So if you have an accomplishment you'd like to share, big or small, you can send it to me at donnaodonnellfigurski@gmail.com. And that can be an itty-bitty giant step, big or small. Read more about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. You can find it both on surviving traumatic brain injury, but I would suggest going to donnaodonnellfigurski.com. And then you can find all of the cast of characters, most of the cast of characters that are in the book. You will see pictures and they will be identified. And that's always fun. I like to know when I'm reading a book, I like the pictures, even though it's not a picture book. I like the pictures so I can relate to the characters in the book more. So you can do that. So, and if you do choose to read my book, again, you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, wherever, Kobo, wherever. Your independent bookstores, you can read it from the library. Just ask everybody to order it for you. And if you do read it, please write a review. Oh, I can tell you this. It's my birthday Tuesday, on the 7th. And I don't want any birthday gifts. The only thing I want are book reviews. So if you read my book or if you have read my book, please write a book review. It doesn't have to be long, but it sure helps. I always say a book review is a book's best friend. So do that, please. And my next show will be in 2 weeks on December 19th with Gail Wakin, who will be talking with her about her brain injury, and she has some books we're going to be talking about as well. So, as I always say, if you liked my show, tell 10 of your friends. But if you hated it, well, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. Just tell the world about my show. Tell the world about my book. We can use all the help we can get over here. So as the clock is ticking up to 6:50, we're going to have to say goodbye. But please stay tuned to the next show with Matt Duffin. It starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So that's just in about 10 minutes. And don't forget to tune in next Sunday with Lisa Dreyer. She's a good friend of mine, too. She's been a host on the Brain Injury Radio for a long time, and she just moved over to Sundays. So I'm really excited to have her playing opposite me. So Lisa Dreyer with Lisa Dreyer with Mess with MS. So please tune in to her. And, of course, as I said, there are shows every night. So pick a host and listen in. So on that note, I'm going to say to Jamie Crane-Mosey and Barbara Wilson, please thank you, or I should say thank you very, very much for joining us tonight and sharing all of your insight. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. All right, and I'll see you all. Have great holidays. They're coming up. They're upon us really fast. And I'll see you all in the new year. So take good care. Stay healthy and safe. And that goes for everybody out there who's listening. All right, good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Happy holidays.